This episode is sponsored by The Bridge to Recovery, a nonprofit program on 115 acres near Bowling Green, Kentucky, a tranquil place where they've been changing lives for over 40 years. Their people improve their quality of life by acknowledging past emotional wounds and healing from all forms of trauma. The CEO, Paul Hamlin, has been a friend of mine for 20 years. Call him directly at 858-945-7848. That's 858-945-7848, or you can learn more about The Bridge to Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or visiting thebridgetorecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
I'm Jamie Vance, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
I'm Tom Gentry. Thanks for listening to The Path to Authenticity. This episode features a conversation with a friend and colleague named Jamie Vance. Jamie lives in Nashville, Tennessee. And he's just someone who I respect. Professionally, personally, you name it. He's one of the best people you'll ever meet. So we get to hear about what he's doing with the company he's built, the Vance Group, and how he got there, and you'll definitely get a sense of what a great guy he is from this conversation. So I hope you enjoy it. Jamie Vance.
Just the product of some bad seeds. Just some guys.
Jamie, how's it going?
Good, man. It's good. Just, nice weather outside. I got a little trail run in today. I think it's in the 70s here. Probably not as warm as it is down there, but it's nice. And, one day at a time, man.
Well, this is a nice little surprise, having an opportunity to have you on the podcast. And I really didn't plan it or expect it, and just kind of thought of it and reached out to you over the weekend, and it came together quick. Here we are. So thank you.
Yeah, I'll try not to let you down.
You're not going to let me down, man. Come on. What are you talking about? No, you never have before. I don't expect you to do it now. So why don't you just take a minute to tell the folks listening what it is you do and what a typical day in the life for Jamie Vance looks like?
Man, a typical day in the life, and what do I do? There's no other thing to call what I do than a consultant, but, consultant sounds way too advisory for what I actually do every day. And so, various types of companies and organizations, I work with them on, my background is marketing and behavioral health, but I've ended up, working with a lot of different types of companies, organizations, individuals. And basically in marketing or in personal performance or in anything, there are blocks to success, the same as in, there are certain blocks to personal health and other things that are blocks to realizing that success. And so what I do is I come in and work with them, work with their team on helping them to realize that. And it's a lot more, kind of on the ground with them than it is, some advisory type of position. And it looks different in a lot of different scenarios. I think my sweet spot, in the marketing realm is to take, you know, 10 of your, outreach representatives, sales representatives, whatever the vernacular is, and work with them individually to improve performance. That's helped me a lot in my life. And so that's one of the things I really like to do. But I do everything from, you know, working out business plans for large companies, consulting other leaders on, you know, how to best lead their teams, doing workshops on organizational health, which is something that's really important to me. And then, you know, startups of creating the total marketing engine and getting that to work. That's what I do. But a day in the life looks like, you know, if it's not right now, I've been sleeping a little later right now for some reason until about 5:30. But usually I'll get up at 4:30 and get my day going and do some meditation and, you know, make some breakfast or something like that and get after it. You know, I work on all coasts and so my days are pretty full. And I go train jujitsu at about 11 o'clock. And then come back and, you know, I always told somebody once that they were, you know, the investment group and they said, what's your dream job? And I said, I don't know exactly, but if I could show up in board shorts and flip flops, that would be it. So some days I get to do that. And so that's pretty cool. But that's what a day in the life looks like when it's not, you know, we're not under a pandemic lockdown. I tend to travel quite a bit. And so I'll go on site and work with teams, on the ground a lot. Then I come home, and, you know, I play with my kids every day and I'm pretty normal.
Well, I would consider you above normal or at least above average in my book, but, and modest is another way I would describe you, but. So what's your story? How'd you get here to this place in life where this is what you're doing?
Yeah, it's interesting, man. I mean, specifically, I'll answer that in a second. You know, specifically how the Vance Group formed is its own story. How I got here was that, you know, I grew up, my parents did healthcare. I don't know if that had any influence or not, on me working in that realm, but, you know, I started, you know, I didn't graduate from high school. I didn't go to college. I did go to college, but I didn't graduate from college. Most of my work ethic and anything that I've kind of learned, I learned through, you know, agriculture and like being out among the world and working with people. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I polished that later on in life. I think that's important. But, you know, the raw piece of it was, you know, being out among the world and you know, the average person and learning how to get along with other people. I think that's the number one skill. You can be as smart as you want to, but if you can't work with somebody, you're not going to get anything done. So, you know, I kind of learned that and learned to kind of hustle a little bit. And so those are my two saving graces, I think. And then I got into behavioral health, through my own personal recovery. I was sober and wanted to work with, addicts. And so I worked on an adolescent addiction unit and then, you know, was going to do kind of the therapy route, but if you don't know me, if you do know me rather, you would know that sitting in a room all day talking to people, I'm going to kind of phase out and, you know, pretty quick. So I need to be up and moving and accomplishing a lot. It's important for me. I got what they call the ADD. So I like to do a lot of things. And so the role in business development opened up and I had no idea really what I was getting into, but I got into it. And for me, it's just kind of, I'm a failure is not an option kind of person. If I've got, you know, two legs and two hands, then I've got a chance. And so I just kind of made that work at first. And then made that work for a while and, learned you know, a long time ago that, there's nothing wrong with asking for help and kind of mirroring other people. And so I've always had mentors and coaches. And then I went on to work for a company, and that was kind of a lucky thing because that company, had a really invested a lot into their employees. And so I was able to receive a lot of coaching to kind of smooth off some of my rough edges and just learn some things. And so I was a rep there for a number of years, and then became a vice president, was recruited to be a vice president, and was having to fly out west a lot, and didn't hate it, but didn't love it either. And learned a lot about myself, and learned that I work really well if I'm the person you need, and then you let me do what I do. And I've learned to also do that with other people. But if I'm the person you need, but you won't let me do what I do, then that's a no start. So, I was, fortunate enough to work for a guy named Kevin Lee, and he taught me a whole lot. And he was the CEO of a company and hired me as his chief marketing officer. Both of us knew that I didn't have the on paper qualifications. And there was probably other people that he could have got, but we grew that company a whole lot. I learned a lot along the way. Just about, you know, from him, he was a really kind of humble guy and really nice to all his employees. And I just really loved how he just was who he was, you know, and he never changed, and success didn't change him, and nothing changed him. He had several, you know, successful ventures, and he was just cool. But he was also very perceptive and kind of operated on a few set principles. And any successful person I've ever met does that. So I learned a lot in that experience. And then, you know, after a while, I think that you find, for me anyway, people like me find that, you know, there's a confinement and that you have to continue to grow. And my next stage, which is how I formed the Vance Group, a few years ago, I like doing things that are really hard and I have no idea what I'm doing. I think it's always good to be engaged in something like that. And so I started Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu a couple of years ago. And you know, you're a white belt when you start.
Right.
And you just basically, kindly, you know, get beat up for, you know, a couple of years because you're not good at it. So.
Right.
It's such a, you know, technique based thing that, you know, what happens is, you know, 40-year-old athletes like me go in there and think they still got it, and all the brute brawn and strength that you have is not going to do anything. And so my first experience was that, you know, I just got mauled by like 100-pound woman, and I was like, okay. And so, you know, I also met a lot of really cool people. And one of those guys, his name is Andre Kutrich. And he's a black belt out of Studio 540 in San Diego, which is a really neat thing. But also, he is, you know, an executive in behavioral health and healthcare, you know, and has a good tenure in that. And I was in, you know, there and just, you know, for the last several years, you know, I've been pushing rocks up hills with companies, and that's what I'm good at doing. And you know, but after a period of time, our industry kind of took a shift, and he was like, you know, we were doing a private lesson, and I think he could tell that I was just kind of wearing it, and we were just sitting there on the mat, you know, kind of rolling and doing some stuff. He was like, man, what's going on? And I kind of told him, he was like, here's what I want you to do. And I love that I have people in my life like this. You know, he's like, here's what I want you to do. You didn't, you know, dance around or anything. He was just like direct to it. I want you to start a company and I want you to work for yourself. And what I think you need to do is call it the Vance Group. And yeah, you're one person, but you know, collectively, you know, I've seen you do it a lot. If there's a project that needs to happen in this space, you can bring the right people to do it together and you won't do a bad job because you won't let somebody work on the project that's not good. And so whatever it is you can do. And I was like, yeah, whatever. He's like, no, really, I want you to do this and you need to start it. I was like, I love it. And so I kind of dipped my toe in the water a little bit. And then I got a call that the position I had, I didn't have anymore. And I've never lost a position in my life ever, except, you know, a long time ago, but not in any recent history. And that just wasn't a part of my story. And, I'm a big, like, David Goggins fan, and just, I don't kind of follow anybody. I kind of follow my own beliefs and ideas, but, you know, I am like a no rear view mirror kind of a guy. And so, you know, I came home and told my wife, like, yeah, I lost my job. She's, you know, devastated. You know, we've got four kids and new house, and, you know, it wasn't a good situation. And, she's like, so what are you going to do? And I said, well, you know, for the past 10, 15 years, I've been, you know, leading people towards, you know, exactly what to do right now. You know, so how do you go make it work? And, you know, it was the first time that 100% I had to really practice what I preach. And, you know, I always tell people that work for me, you got to hustle. You got to do 5 meetings a day and at least 20 phone calls. You know, I mean, the number doesn't matter, but if you want something, you have to work for it. So she said, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to wake up tomorrow and I'm not going to go to sleep until, you know, I figure it out. And so I formed the company in like one day. Had no client. I had one client, but it was just a small thing that, cause I dipped my toe in the water with it a little bit. So I had one client, and, you know, I just really got after it. I called a few of my mentors, cause it kind of shook me in my pride and my ego that I'd lost the position. Like, how could they do that? Don't they know, you know, how great I was for the organization? In retrospect, you know, ethically, I probably wouldn't have done that. You know, I've had to eliminate positions before, and I'm just the kind of guy that I'll make sure you land okay. But, you know, I think for me, actually, it was a good thing because I needed to be forced into what I'm doing right now, or I would have never done it the way that I'm doing it now. And, you know, I was sure that it was going to take, you know, 6 months to get kind of solvent with the company and everything where it needed to be. And, it took off very quickly. And it was invigorating for me because I just got to really hustle and grind and again, and be smart with my time and have fun. And that's what I've been doing. And, I really enjoy it. And, you know, it's really good because, yeah, I get to really see those tangible results. It's 100%, you know, results and performance oriented, and I either perform or I don't. And I like being in that position. So, I think it's taken, you know, it's added a few years to my life. I mean, I feel, you know, better, younger, and just, you know, I'm not carrying weight that's not mine. So That's it.
Well, and, you know, one of the things that I've experienced, at least to some degree in my career, is, and I'm sure you can relate to this, that, you know, at some point as you progress, I mean, if you're like me, and I think you're this way too, you get to a point where you can't be as good as you are if you're working for somebody else. It just gets in your way. And unless it's just the exactly right set of circumstances, you know, which is hard to find.
Yeah, I think it's hard to find. I think it's possible, if you know that concept, I think it's possible to create. I've done a good job as a leader, and I've done a really bad job. So, you know, I could talk for days about the bad things, you know, the things I've done that, you know, weren't good decisions. But the one few times I can think of that I tried to make it that if you work for me, it's almost like you don't. And my only job is, I think with leadership, once somebody gets that opportunity, they kind of don't know what it means. And so they kind of just insert a bunch of stuff. And, you know, I remove instead of add. And so my only thing I did in leadership with a few people, and it turned out really well, was to just support them being successful.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Like, yeah. I'm going to make you really successful at this thing, because ultimately, yes, that would pay off for me. And so I really got out of their way, and I didn't, you know, have all the answers, and it was more consultative, and worked really well. Now, I haven't done that every time. I'm sure there's people that could call you up right now and say, well, that's not what he did with me. Yeah, I mean, it's true. But a couple times I have, and I learned a big lesson there. So I think that it is possible to create that to some degree. Certainly not typical, and certainly for the most part, not what I've experienced. I told you that one time, I think, you know, with Kevin Lee, I think that guy just knew how to make things work, because you know, he had been, you know, so many times in a position that he had to make that thing work. So he just knew, like, hire good people, get out of the way, you know?
Yeah.
But even then, you've got to still deal with all the other people you work with and all that kind of stuff. And so there is, I think it is limiting. I think that on my own, you know, it's just me. So, you know, it does, I think it just causes me to perform better too. You know, I can tell you that, especially early on and even today, that, you know, I just had to really get after it, you know, because it was up to me, and I kind of rather it be that way. Some people are uncomfortable with that. I'm not. It's not that I'm not uncomfortable with it. It's just, it's worth it to me. So I'll go ahead and go through it. I'll take the risk.
Well, and I've met a lot of people over the years in our industry who were afraid to take the risk, you know, just afraid to venture out on their own. And their own inner dialogue, they buy into that, well, I just can't make that work. Even if it's a matter of being a therapist in private practice, you know, people convince themselves that, well, how am I going to get the business? And they get sucked into the illusion of security of working for somebody else or a big agency. And, one of the things that's really interesting to me about this time that we're going through right now with this pandemic is that it's shining a light on the fact that security is an illusion, because
yeah,
it's just not real. It's not.
No. Yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, you can certainly increase or decrease the odds, you know, on your own by what you do. But I think that, you know, we're not guaranteed anything. I'm not guaranteed another second, you know. And that really changes. I through some life circumstances that were, you know, kind of unfortunate, I just live my life that way, you know, because I'm very aware of my own mortality. And I'm also very aware of, you know, how toxic, to way more people than me, you know, those limiting beliefs can be. And so, you know, I'm not a perfect example of anything. But I think that, it makes me really sad to think about, and I've seen it, you know, so I don't want it for myself. And I'm sure to some degree I still do it. I'm not totally free of anything, but I think that it just makes me sad to think about, you know, going through this life and not doing it the way, you know, not doing it to the extent that fire inside you, you know, or just letting that fire die down. I mean, God, there's nothing worse for me than to think about that, you know.
Well, and
go through this life with mediocrity.
Well, and that's really what this podcast is about, is, you know, I mean, that fire inside that you're talking about, I mean, can be, you know, synonymous with your own authenticity. Like, when we're in congruence with who we really are and what we're really supposed to be doing, then we do have that fire, and it feeds everything that we do. And and we're better at everything because of it, you know? And for me, what part of, you know, doing this podcast and what's been going on with me the last couple of years is at some point I had to decide, am I going to take another job in the interest of having a steady paycheck, health insurance, whatever it is, you know, but at the expense of doing what I really want to do, you know? And the last go round when, you know, I had this contract that lasted a couple years and this job kind of ran its course, it was okay, Tom. Like, what, you know, what are you going to do? You going to go try to, you know, find a box that you can fit in, or are you going to do what you actually want to do and stop putting it off? And if you're not going to do it now, when the hell are you ever going to do it? And it was just making that decision was empowering. And a lot of it, it was a process unfolding too. You know, I ask you these questions as if I don't know the answers to any of them, but we've known each other for a long time. And really this process for me started, you know, probably a couple years after you and I met when we were working together. And it started by me asking myself, you know, is this really how I want to be spending my time?
Yeah.
And
I think that we, you know, Tom, I think, man, we lie to ourselves and tell ourselves that we have a certain amount of time. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not, you know, trying to be morbid and saying that, you know, you don't, because I don't know. But it's like if you don't know how much money is in your bank account, well, that's going to affect the way you spend money. You know, so if I just blinded you to how many funds you had, you know, and you had no idea, I would say that you would be more conservative with how you spent,
mm-hmm.
because you don't know. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're going to watch that because you don't want to run out of it. And the same thing with time. I think that we operate as if we have any clue to what that account looks like and what's in it. And in fact, we don't. And so, you know, it's almost like, okay, a couple of different things, you know. One, you know, is saying no, you know,
mm-hmm.
like I started doing that a while back and I, you know, I don't waste my time. I try not to. I mean, I'm sure I do, like on some stupid Netflix stuff or, you know, a slot machine game on my phone, but in general, you know, with my bigger life choices, I no longer do things because I think that, A, it's some social construct or thing that I got growing up that, you know, would make my mommy or daddy proud.
Right.
You know, some crap like that. Or, you know, what you would want me to do. Or, you know, anybody for that matter, you know.
Yeah.
It's just interesting, man, you know, the way that for whatever reason, we're kind of hardwired to view these types of things.
Well, and those social constructs, I talk about that kind of stuff a lot on this podcast because, you know, we're just groomed to believe that we have to live a certain way. You know, you get you get out of high school, you go to college. If you're not married within a couple years after that, then there's something wrong with you, you know, and you're supposed to have kids in pretty short order. And, you know, you need to have a full-time job that you work during the day and you have benefits and, you know, and really that is just a social construct.
Mm-hmm.
It's not something that we have to do.
It's funny, man. You know, I was kind of like, because I was running today, I went trail running and I went with a friend of mine and we social distanced for you, police out there. And, but anyways, you know, I was just kind of inventorying, you know, my circle of influence and nobody answers to anybody. You know what I mean? It's really interesting. I mean, it's a diverse group of people in a way, but, you know, all of them kind of call their own shots, and it's not, you know, a typical way of life. And all of them are very successful in whatever that channel may be. And that may wear different on some people than the others. But, you know, I mean, like one of my buddies, and, you know, I'm not like this guy at all, but in my own way, you know, I am. But, you know, he like travels around the world and does photography and like swims with sharks and, you know, is a black belt and does all kinds of cool stuff. And right now he's just got his kids like off the grid, you know, in the Sierra Mountains. I mean, you know, it's so diverse of people, but the one common denominator is that they aren't concerned with what you think about them. Mm-hmm. I mean, really not. Like, I'm not saying like this is a mask. I'm saying for real.
They're right.
and they're not defined by much of anything. You know, they don't allow, you know, things to define them. I can't be around that. You know, to where it's, you gotta have, you know, the Suburban with the stickers on the back and you gotta go here and do this. You gotta be at this country club. Not that I disagree with that lifestyle at all, you know, because there's parts of it that I think are cool and I'd like to do, but it just doesn't work for me, you know, to do what everybody else does, you know, never has. That could be some kind of flaw in my character, but just how I am.
Well, I don't think of it that way. Not,
yeah.
Not with you anyway.
I think we're in the same boat there, Tommy.
No, same but, boat. You know, you and I have been fortunate enough to share some mentors over the years and to get to work together. And, it's, you know, when I think about that and when I think about the time that you and I got to share, and it just makes me happy to think about it. And, yeah, I mean, you know, what I think about, with you, when I think about you, my go-to is, you know, in the middle of my career, like a big milestone was getting this job at this facility in Nashville where you worked at the time, and your career was just in the beginning of really taking off. And you know, I mean, it's this, to me, it's a big company with like 300 people. I don't really know anybody, you know, I'm up there training, and, you know, like all the people who I did know, like all of a sudden one day or like one's out of state here and one's out of state there. And then, you know, all of a sudden I'm in this big cafeteria, like a little kid who's the first day at the new school, and who the hell am I going to sit with? And you're the guy who made me feel welcome. You know, you're the one guy who was like perceptive enough to see what was happening with me, and you went out of your way to make me feel welcome, which was a big deal to me at the time, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand, you know, the one thing I'm often like, nobody ever does that stuff with me. You know what I mean? I mean, sometimes people do, but it's almost people are the opposite generally. Like they kind of want things to be hard for you. I don't know why, but like people just aren't very nice, you know, sometimes. And so it's just weird, man. But I think, you know, I try to be to people just because I really know what it feels like for people not to be, you know, just to make it kind of hard for you and to not be inviting and welcoming. Like, you know, how would you want to be treated in this situation? You know, simple little precepts. You know, people really look over.
Mm-hmm. Well, and again, this is another one of the things that I talk about on this podcast. The last two words I say at the end of each episode are "be nice."
Right.
And it's just like, it's to remind myself and to just put that out there into the world, because we do have a choice. And at some point a number of years ago, I just kind of decided that I don't want to live in a world where people don't say hello to each other, even though they walk right past each other every single day. You know, I want to make eye contact with people. And I made a decision that I was going to live that way, that I was going to say hello to people. I was going to acknowledge people. I was going to make eye contact with people. And, you know, when it felt inviting or whatever, make conversation and just be friendly. And it really changes the way you see everything. It enhances the quality of your life so much. And you know, it was
learned that more than anything with traveling, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because I was taught not to do that. You know, I mean, you know, the kind of messages I got as a little kid was, you know, it's fucking crazy to do that. You don't do that, you know?
Right.
which is really, you know, not who we are, I don't think, you know, because I think we are all inherently good and nice people. And, you know, that inclination to make things hard for people or not roll out the welcome mat, you know, I don't think that's really us. I think that's our bullshit, you know?
It's a fear, man. And I think that you're either opened or closed, you know, and there's an illusion that if you're closed, you're going to cling to what you have so that you won't lose whatever that may be.
Right.
And that if you're open, that somebody is going to take it from you, you know, or take advantage of you or whatever. It's like, I'm open to arguments, but I'm convinced 100% that if you're open, you're not only open, you're open to everything. Right. You know, yeah, you're open to more disappointment. You're open to more heartache. You're open to more success. You're open to more financial success. You're open to more financial loss. You're open to everything. But if you're closed, baby, you're just closed. And, you know, you're limited. And so I think that, you know, being open to everything, and that starts with just like what you're saying, like, say hi to the person at the gas station. You're not that damn important. Like, get over yourself, man. Like, you know, get off the phone and talk to your kid. I mean, like, dude, you know, and I, you know, any given day I can be either one of those people, but I'm conscious and aware of when I'm being the other guy, and I try not to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, this is why I love you, dude. This is why I wanted to have you on the podcast.
You too, my man.
And, you know, it's so important for us to have, as guys, to have good, healthy men in our worlds. And it's, I mean, until you have it, you just don't know how valuable it is. Right?
Yeah. Man, I couldn't and wouldn't want to live without that. But, you know, as a child, I didn't have it, but I didn't have the kind that you're supposed to, you know.
Right.
It happens, you know, it's not an excuse or a crutch, you know, it's just you're dealt kind of the cards you are. But I believe it's also, you know, that's why we, you know, kind of have a life, is that you get to kind of make some of those things right. But in recent years, I mean, I've been surrounded, you know, by wonderful people and men, especially, and women. But I think for me, it was a male thing because of the father piece of it. But, you know, just people that, you know, helped me. And now I'm at the age to where it's my turn. And that's so weird, dude, you know, that.
Yeah.
It's my turn to be that guy. And, you know, I try to do it and I am doing it. And people are like, you know, they don't know what to think when, you know, you really try to help them get a leg up on life legitimately, you know, they don't know what to think about that. And I only do it because I couldn't have made it through this without it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, flip of the switch to where when you become the one who's giving that energy to younger guys, I mean, it kind of happened gradually for me, and I don't know if I noticed it as clearly as you're noticing it, obviously now or in recent years, I guess, is when you've started to really put it together. But the beauty of it for me is I get to give what nobody gave me, or not enough people gave me, or whatever, you know? And one of the things that, and, you know, I mean, a lot of guys would think it sounds funny talking about this, but, you know, it comes up in some of the readings I've done on men. You know, one of the needs that we have as men is to have admiration from older men, you know? So to be able to, like, see a guy who's a couple years into this process of change, or sometimes even just a few months into, like, changing their lives, and to be able to look at him and say, you're a good man. Like, you are good. I mean, and, you know, I'm at a point now where I do that without even thinking about it. And it hit me a while back because I got feedback from a guy who reminded me how many times I said that to him and how much it meant to him, you know? But yeah, man, we need that stuff, and we need to be welcomed into manhood, you know? And, into the, you know, higher tiers of manhood, I guess, for lack of a better way to describe it. But, you know, and we've had, you know, like I think both of us, one of the things you and I have in common is that Frank is someone who gave that to both of us. You know, there was this experience of admiration that we got from him, and I know I needed it. And I just say that, you know, I don't know if you've noticed it or not. I just know how much he thinks of you, you know? And, I mean, he's been a really important person in my life in so many different ways.
For sure.
Yeah. It's awesome.
Absolutely. I think that there's, enduring quality to him and other people like him that, you know, I learned a while back. I had a coach, and I had an employee who is underperforming, and they were consistently underperforming, and I was going to have to write them up. And I've always paid for my own coaching, and it's never the stuff you think you're going to hear. It's very interpersonal and deep, you know, because leadership is about who you are at your core, not what your skill set is.
Right.
And so the coach, you know, he asked me, so, okay, well, yeah, you can go ahead and put him on a performance plan, but what's his wife's name? And I was like, I don't know. Oh yeah. What is he having trouble with in life right now? I don't know, you know, and I learned a huge lesson there, you know, and he said, how can you expect to motivate someone if you don't know what motivates them?
Right.
You know, you don't know them on a human level. And that was a young kind of rookie leadership mistake on my part. And one thing I've really learned from guys like Frank, I mean, dude, Frank's been there for me in the thick, you know,
me too. definitely.
And still is, like, there are very few people that, you know, I think are capable of helping me with, you know, major decisions. He's on that short list, yeah. You know, and has been for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing. We do end up finding the right people if we keep our eyes open, don't we?
Right.
Yeah. Well, and you know, this this has been great, dude. Like,
yeah, thank you so much.
Is there anything else you want to talk about what you're doing?
You know, it's just the only other thing that I would, you know, my latest kind of discovery, which is already like a inner truth that I knew, but it was proven again. And it was kind of during this COVID-19 thing that kind of immediately, like, a few people, of course, rightly so, you know, hit the panic button, and then my company lost some revenue or whatever, like a lot of people did. And so, you know, what I also found was there was tons of opportunity, like, just to be helpful.
Right.
And who knows how that's ever going to monetize itself or not. But so that wasn't clear, but what was clear was that, Jamie, there's a lot of work for you to do.
Mm-hmm.
What wasn't clear was, how are you going to get paid for it?
Right.
And so that, I got to say, for me, was a hard thing, you know? So I went ahead and did that anyway, because I've learned that lesson at other points in life and through other things. And I just, you know, was available and did tons of free stuff and just, you know, whatever. It was there to just be helpful. And what I found was that, you know, through that, you know, some other opportunities presented themselves and whatever, and I was fine. But, you know, I told my clients right when all this stuff hit, I said, you got one option, or you got two options, but only one is going to lead you towards success. The other one is not going to be something you want, but it's the more likely one you're going to take. And those two options are, you can think about yourself. I said, because this is what we call a defining moment.
Mm-hmm.
And so your choices are to think about yourself, your company, and cling to what you have and try not to lose it any way you can. And mm-hmm. chances are you're going to. You're going to prematurely let go of employees. You're going to do all kinds of stuff. And there's people that have done that.
Mm-hmm.
And some had to, but I'm not of the school that everybody had to.
Right.
I think that fear drove the bus on a lot of stuff, that it was unnecessary. I said, or you have the opportunity, because there's, in a crisis, there's two people. There's a victim and a responder.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. Or a bystander, you know, right. People that just kind of watch. But, you know, there's, in the action part of it, there's a victim or a responder. And you've got an opportunity to really rise above and go and spend some time and think about, wipe the money off the table. Don't even think about it. Given what I do as a profession, how can I help the world right now?
Right.
And only do that thing. Only do that thing. And I don't want to hear about the money part of it. I just want you to do that.
Right.
And that's hard, right?
It's hard to initiate it, but once you do it.
Right. But, you know, some of the greatest companies in the world were not formed on green pastures. They were formed in, like, the Great Depression. So
right.
I don't want to hear it. You know what I mean? And some of the best people in the world came out of our toughest times as the toughest generation, you know, went through the worst crap. I don't want to hear it, you know?
Right.
So do the right thing, point blank. And that's really hard to do. And, you know, it's a lot easier to, you know, just worry about yourself and worry about your company and complain all the time and be in fear.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think that that light has really shined itself. And, you know, you see that with, you know, small businesses of the world didn't even have a chance because it, you know, the big ones came in and just grabbed that money, you know,
mm-hmm.
And you see it everywhere. It's just like fear response, mm-hmm. fear response. Somebody, some company, some organization, some leaders will take the other route and take the high road, and they'll be recognized and be in history books.
And I would argue those are the real leaders.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I mean, just because you're successful today doesn't mean you're a good leader.
Yeah.
And I'm here to say that, you know, that doesn't mean you're a good leader. Just because you got a little money, you had some success, doesn't mean that you're a good leader that's going to stand the test of time.
All right. One last question that I ask everybody at the end. So if there was a time in your life when the younger Jamie, there was something he needed to hear, or he was going through it, when was it and what would you tell him?
You know, I've actually done this a lot. I've done a lot of my own interpersonal work. So I've done this a lot, but being asked that question today, you know, it had to be in one of the many times, you know, when I was a little boy, and I have a son now. So this whole thing has kind of changed for me, but I think the worst thing that ever happened, one of the worst things, not the worst by any stretch, but one really damaging thing was that I gave up on something and somebody else told me that it was okay. You know, and I gave up because I didn't think I could do it or whatever. And, you know, if there was a way to communicate that to myself and just tell myself that, man, it's not going to be easy, but you got this, you know, man, I think that would have really changed the course of my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember I quit martial arts. I was really good at it. And just one day, for whatever reason, like, you know, you get ideas as a kid. And I think the quitting mind and the quitting attitude in life, personally, you know, it's a personal opinion. I think that it's super toxic, you know. And I remember it was so easy to quit. Like, I was just like, I don't want to go. And everybody was like, okay, you know,
yeah,
don't go. And nobody tried to say, hey, man, you think, you know, nobody tried to kind of talk me through that.
Yeah.
And so I would go back and I would have a real man-to-man conversation with myself. And I said, no, that's not the way we do it, man. No, you keep at it. And I wish I would have learned that lesson earlier in life.
Yeah. Well, Jamie, this was great, man. I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
You bet.
All right.
Thank you, man. And have a great rest of your day. Be safe out there. Tell Jack I said what's up. And you're a good man. You're a good dad. Thank you for having me on your show. And anything I can ever do to help you, let me know.
All right. Love you.
See you, buddy.
Thanks for listening to The Path to Authenticity. If you'd like to learn more about our guest, you can find links in the show notes or visit our website at thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor, if you have a suggestion for a topic, or you know someone who would make a great guest, email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. If you know someone else who would enjoy the show, or even just a particular episode, please share it with them. Every little bit helps. If you're not already a subscriber, please consider becoming one wherever it is you choose to listen. You can find the show on Patreon, where by becoming a patron, you can hear episodes before they're released publicly. You can gain access to supplemental content. There are other benefits in the various tiers. Visit patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. Join our Facebook community or follow the show on Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. We also have a YouTube channel. You can connect with us on Twitter or Pinterest. To hear the songs from this and every episode, you can find the Path to Authenticity playlist on Spotify. Obviously, there are a lot of ways you could be spending your time, so I appreciate you spending some of it here with me. I'm Tom Gentry. Thanks for listening. Be nice. Thank you.
great, honeybee.
The Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.